Hello, horror fans. Welcome back to Selling the Scream, a show about horror movies brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. I am Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob, leaving us with our nerd and co-host, Josh, the child of the night, Yoakum. How's it going, Josh?
It's going well. I do make very beautiful music. Thank you for noticing.
Sweet music. Sweet.
Sweet, too. But, yeah. How are you doing?
You know, I'm here. We just got back from a little bit of a trip and thought I was sick, but apparently I'm not sick. I'm just weak.
Yeah, it can be easy to mix those things up. Just being older. Yeah. I have a terrible illness. Like, I have these lines in my face and my muscles are all the time.
I haven't died yet.
But we're not alone. We've got a returning champion. We got Jennifer Fett with us. Yay!
Happy New Year! Although Larry David would read me to filth for saying that this late in the month.
It counts. It's not inaccurate. I think this officially puts you in the lead for guest spots, though, right?
Am I ahead of Jason now?
I'll have to run the numbers. I hadn't done that beforehand. I'll come back with a tally maybe at some point later in the show.
We're not prepared.
Well, I wasn't prepared for that. Hold on, that's not in the script. Do you have your edits? Do you have your edits in front of you?
I'll fix it in post.
Okay. Where'd you go on this trip where you thought you were terribly ill, but you weren't?
We took a short little weekend flight down to Florida.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Some friends I've met along for the past decade or so, playing games online and stuff. One of them lives in Minnesota, the rest of them live in Florida, and the Minnesota guy was going back down to visit, you know, his old stomping grounds, and it just kind of flew together at the last minute. He's like, he's going, and I jokingly said, oh, I'm going to be down there too, and then everybody else was really excited, and I said, no, I was joking, and then Lisa overheard me saying that I'm joking and said, I mean, we can go. It's the slow season when we kind of have a little bit extra cash right now. So I was like, oh, all right. So I kind of got pseudo bullied into going on a trip.
Having a good time.
Yeah. Well, everyone was like saying, oh, well, let me look up flight plans for you. Let me tell you how much flights cost.
Classic bullying.
I know. Mm-hmm.
I hate when that happens.
People want to see me and spend time with me for some reason. I don't get it.
Jerks.
But we went day-to-day in Universal Studios and then hung out with friends the second day and then came home on the third day. And when I felt like I was going to die on the plane right home.
Sure, that wasn't just the experience of, like, modern flight.
I felt far worse on the trip up there than I did on the trip back in terms of just, like, the experience of flight and travel in general. It was literally physical pain on the way home.
Well, I'm glad it's, you know, not what you thought it was, and you're feeling somewhat better now. So
I'm back just being depressed.
The status quo.
Yeah, back to normal.
Have you been up to anything, Jen? I don't think we've touched base since trivia since our last showing.
I went back to Chicago for the new year, and I ended up getting sick too, Jed. I was sick for like 2 weeks with just a cold, a common cold.
Yuck.
But finally been back around to doing stuff and being social. So I took a little weekend trip out to Camino Island a couple weeks ago. That was nice. And yeah, getting ready to start a new class at Movie Madness tomorrow. I think I told you about that though, Josh. It's a found footage one this time. So I'm excited.
What is Movie Madness? I haven't heard.
It's a video store / museum here that's affiliated with our favorite, well, my favorite anyway. I don't know about you, Josh, but movie theater.
Presumptuous.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. That's my.
It's really great.
So they have this little mini plex and they do classes there, and it's great. I love it.
What kind of classes? Like, what do they do?
Mostly, I mean, there'll be themes of any kind. So I obviously go to the horror ones, but sure. They have, you know, a whole series on a certain director or other genres, things like that. They have one-offs, like Josh and I went to a one-off on Battle Royale once.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So yeah
that sounds cool. it's really fun. Yeah. This is normally when I would like hop in and ask like if we normally talk about like homework and horror movies, but that's kind of like the premise of the show, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Homework about horror movies.
So I guess let's continue to talk about them some more.
Yeah. We'll shift our focus a little bit, but we'll still continue the topic, I guess.
The bit dies. The bit is taken out and killed. It is...
No, Josh, no one asked what you have been up to.
Oh, yeah. I mostly just like, you know, working and that normal adulting stuff. But I had a conversation with my son recently that made me laugh quite a bit. That was we were talking like Johnny Cash song came on as like the and I was talking a little bit about him because I don't think he'd ever heard him before. And I said like, oh, you know, he went to prison for a little while. And, you know, I try to be honest with my kid. He's eight, but like sometimes you like wander into like the daddy landmine territory where like he asked why he was arrested. And I said for drugs. And then like got way more drug questions than I was expecting. And I had to like kind of field that. I can't do like the thing that you want to do if you're being completely honest, be like, oh, actually, like, no, they're like, they're pretty great because they'll ruin your life. They're so good. They're so good. They'll just destroy you. But no, he told me that he would never do drugs. And I was proud of him in that moment. And then he said, because it looks like they taste terrible. Okay. Good reason. Okay.
I mean, the end result is what you want, so I suppose the reason doesn't matter too much.
Also, that's just flat out wrong.
I mean, depending on the drug, like there's well, you know, I think just chewing up OxyContin probably doesn't taste that good.
Touché.
But now I can give a proper intro. Do we talk about drugs here if we're not covering Mandy on this show?
No.
No, not typically. This is a show where we talk about horror movies, specifically ones that Josh has chosen in an attempt to turn me into a fan of the genre. He's got a reasonably successful track rate so far. And it may continue today. We'll see.
Yeah. We're talking a bit about Dracul. That was the choice I gave you last time to pick your poison for Dracula. And what you want to tell the good folks what you picked here if they didn't read the episode description?
Yeah, we're doing Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was 1992, 94, yeah. One of those.
Please, Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's
all right. Yeah, I gotta attribute all the correct names.
Put all the apostrophes in the right place. You had mentioned that you were like just talking about this one recently before you picked it, and I'm curious if this is your if this is your first viewing of this.
I have seen like scenes from it, like maybe online and things like that, but I've never actually watched them.
Okay.
I was talking about this with my wife because we were discussing about how like some of the effects were done, and I don't know what the context was, but I was letting her know that I had seen, you know, where they did all it was like all practical stuff. Like they didn't do a whole lot of any sort of CGI or anything for this movie. So like there's scenes where they have like eyes or faces up in one corner, and then they have the regular scene being played out underneath. And how interesting that is to me that they chose to do it the hard way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can dive right into that. They wanted to do everything practical because at the time everything was sort of shifting to, if not computer effects, at least like digital, like post, it's stuff done in post effects. And he hired on like Francis Ford Coppola hired on like a talented visual effects team that basically said like, what you've told us to do, all we can do is digital effects. And he said, no, actually, my son is a magician. So he is now my new special effects artist. And as much as I always want to like clown on like the nepotism hires, like great job, Roman Coppola. Just astounding work, my friend.
Oh yeah.
Like the first 10 minutes of this movie were literally just me saying to myself, shit, this is pretty.
And there was another reason why, yeah. I think Francis Ford Coppola was so willing to let the talented visual effects artist go. And that was because of the costume designer. And So I learned this. I was telling you guys earlier, I watched this documentary called Blood is Life, and it's free on YouTube. I highly recommend it. But one of the things that he talked about a lot was just his respect for Eiko Ishioka, the costume designer, who went on to do some movies for Tarsem Singh, The Fall and The Cell. But he said, we were very content to let the costumes be the set. Like, they were so amazing and beautiful that they could stand on their own as the majority of the set pieces.
Yeah, I think I was even reading like that, like they were even thinking about doing like almost no set work or just very like expressionist set work. And the studios providing funding were just like, maybe like show a castle, maybe like put something in the background. But yeah, no, it's like I think this is another entry in the canon of like style as substance in a film, because like it's just it's beautiful and interesting like constantly. Like you even mentioned like that opening scene, like that I kind of forgot just how much I love his armor before this rewatch. That's like such a sweet design.
He just looks like a flayed man.
The one that looks like a couture version of skinless Frank and Julia from Hellraiser.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's rad.
Before we get like into the movie itself, though, and I'm also curious. You hadn't seen this one all the way through yet. Have either of you read Dracula, or I'm sure like you've seen some other version, even if it's just like a parody version, or just it's just such a known story. I think like most people know the details, even if they haven't read it.
Yeah, so when this movie came out, of course, I was still, living the lore of this podcast of me not liking horror movies. And I didn't watch it. I never got around to checking it out. But the movie being released did prompt it to be re-released in novel form widely. And I had a copy of the novel, which I probably read 3 or 4 times over the course of my teenage years. So I was very familiar with the actual novel.
I've never read the novel. And honestly, I'm sure I've seen earlier versions or at least clips before this, but this was my formative introduction to the Dracula story. Like I saw this in high school and I just fell in love with it. And yeah, so I don't really remember anything that I saw before it.
I'm actually just starting to read the novel. Like I had it in my head that this was like a shorter one. I don't know why I had that in my head, but I was like, I'll just read through that real quick before we do the show. And it's not. It's a
how many pages?
Fairly lengthy book.
I don't recall it being too egregious in length. It is.
I mean, it's not like it's not it, but it's
yeah. It is. I mean, the writing is a little dry in places, I think, just because of the style of the like how old it is, but I apparently enjoyed it enough to read it several times. So it has been then that I've read it. I haven't read it as an adult. I read it when I was, I probably read it first when I was a little too young to actually read it, like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. But that's
it's funny that you mentioned that, just because the connection that Francis Ford Coppola had with this and why he was like excited to make it was that he was a camp counselor and he would read Dracula to the kids under his care so that they would fall asleep and he could go like get with his girlfriend.
I can see it putting kids to sleep.
It is an epistolary novel, like Carrie. It's got which the movie retains a lot of. It has a lot of the like diary entries and narration and constantly shifting points of view in it. Mm-hmm. Which I think is cool that they like kept that. This is the most faithful adaptation. The real main big change they make is the whole backstory and love story portion. You don't get that in the novel. But Bram Stoker and his life was generally best known for being a theater manager. Like he wrote and he got some income from like the novels and poems and stuff that he wrote, but he was a critic and like the biggest theater star of the day, Henry Irving. took him under his wing, and they developed like a great working relationship because Bram Stoker just did whatever Henry Irving told him to do. And he like operated his theater for a long time, which was like a big deal in London. It was like he was the most famous actor in Britain of his day. Like his own obituary like mentions way more of that stuff than the fact that he wrote anything on his own. it's not the first English language vampire novel. The first one's actually the one that we talked about, like in the Frankenstein episode, the night that Mary Shelley was inspired to write Frankenstein. One of the other people that was there was inspired to write the vampire, John Polidori. So you know, pretty eventful evening for the genre.
That's like the equivalent of the Pixar meeting where they wrote down all the movies on the napkin, plotted out Wall-E and Toy Story and Bug's Life.
Yeah. If like that Pixar meeting was like held at just like a super sexually aggressive guy's house, like kept trying to come at him.
I don't know where they wrote it on the napkin. I know they wrote it on a napkin. It could have been.
It could have been at the Weinstein residence.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You don't know.
The kind of the more famous vampire book, like in his own time, was Carmilla by Sheridan Le Fanu, who like we kind of covered an adaptation of that when we did Black Sunday. And what's I think there's a little homage to Black Sunday in this movie. Other kind of notable thing about Bram Stoker is like. In recent years, it's been discovered that people knew that he was like really close friends with Oscar Wilde. This letter that he wrote as a young man to Walt Whitman turned up, and like if Bram Stoker wasn't gay, he was like putting the curious back in by curious. He was he was definitely wanting to love like poets love with Walt Whitman. So. Which I think, you know, I bring up just because I think there's a lot of blurring of gender roles and gender lines in Dracula. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty transgressive for that time. I think this adaptation in particular like seizes on that quite a bit. There's been a few adaptations throughout the years before that. And I think also Francis Ford Coppola was very aware of all those. There's a lot of callbacks, even in like the opening scene where everybody's getting impaled. There's a Nosferatu in the background. If you look, being impaled back there.
Did not notice that.
So speaking of, it's if you know where to look, it's pretty crystal clear. Huh. But Francis Ford Coppola, have you heard of him? Francis Ford Coppola got his start, like, you know, most classy directors do that we cover on this show, doing softcore pornography, until like he captured a boob on film and it captured the attention of Roger Corman. I feel like in the 60s or 70s, if you filmed the topless woman, like Roger Corman would just show up behind you like, oh, I like your work.
Any time a camera and a breast are in proximity, he like gets a little tingle.
But he kind of did that in college and worked under Corman, and then very quickly had like a hit. His student film, his thesis film, was a critical and fairly well received commercial success. And then he like wrote Patton, and from there it was kind of off to the races, and a run of films in the 70s that's pretty astounding. You know, the Godfather movies, and I love The Conversation. I don't know if either of you have seen that one, but that's a banger. The 80s, not so much. The 80s, things slowed down a little bit for old Francis Ford Coppola. He made some movies that did okay. He made The Outsiders. He made Peggy Sue Got Married. But he didn't quite have the same commercial success. He was still getting nominated for awards and stuff, but like, he had his own production studio with George Lucas, and they just kept making like bomb after bomb. So when he gets this script from Winona Ryder, who dipped out of Godfather Part 3, then was like very concerned about meeting with him and just kind of mentioned it on the way out. And he was super into it. he uh, he wanted to do it, and it was kind of a last ditch project to save their studio. They also got like some investment from like Japanese backers through like Sony, which was part of why like this movie did really well. It also did really well overseas, and like it's kind of crazy how it. I think Jed, you'd be more familiar with like the vampire content coming out of Japan in like the 90s, like the shift in tone of like the Castlevania games and like Helsing and the Vampire Hunter D kind of all come or get revitalized by this.
As
it's like a cultural phenomenon. But yeah, I think the only thing I really also want to touch on up front is like this whole background thing that gets added into the movie where he's like almost kind of specifically Vlad the Impaler. As far as we're aware, Bram Stoker had no idea who Vlad Tepes was. He didn't know that there was actually somebody who went by the name Son of the Dragon or Son of the Devil. It's sort of just a coincidence that there was somebody who had that name, but it's also like if you have a tyrant who's like impaling people and burning peasants to death after offering them a feast, like people might call him the Son of the Devil.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, that's, it still seems like a wild coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it's not in the notes at all, and it's like it seems like most of the inspiration was like he had a Romanian friend that he talked to, but like a lot of the locations and ideas of like a lord and stuff were coming from his time touring in Scotland and like visiting the city that this partially takes place in, Whitby by the sea, and just kind of seeing like it's sort of this coastal ghost town. But let's get into this thing. This is a fun, freaky movie. I got all these dry facts and details here. So let's what do we want to talk about? What's up with this cast?
Wait, first of all, I have to say, I went throughout this movie this time. I've never done this before. I counted the different Draculas, and I want to see if we came up, like, if you agree on the number that I came up with on the different like iterations of
the different like looks and
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna be as we go along, I'm gonna have to interject every once in a while and be like number two or number three, you know. So just warning you that that's coming.
Well, let's talk about Dracula, because there was a few folks in contention for this, and we get this Gary Oldman performance, which pretty good. It's a pretty good one. But this is sort of like he hadn't really had like a huge hit in America. He was mostly known as like a British actor.
Yeah, I think like Sid and Nancy, like, was his biggest role to date.
And like contrary to his name, he was actually quite a young man at the time that this was made. That's but he was recently divorced, and I guess he is now currently sober. He was not sober when they were making this movie, and he sounds like from the stories that folks tell, an amazing collaborator, because he was full of ideas, but also a challenging collaborator, because he was a drunk guy going through a divorce.
he strikes me as someone challenging.
It's kind of implied in the documentary too, because like it's just full of cast interviews, and there's a bunch of scenes of rehearsals, and you can see everyone's having like a great time. It looks like so much fun, but he's not in those scenes. He's just in his solo interview talking head scenes.
The thing I kept reading is that like it's brought up for multiple scenes that like they're like, oh, something's not working. Like, oh, you need to, the actors need to be more scared of you. Gary, go whisper something to them. And like whatever he would whisper to people, just the most unsettling thing. So when a writer brings him the script, she takes this part. I think people bag on Keanu Reeves' performance in this. Winona's maybe not. I'm a big fan of hers as well, but this is maybe not the best role for her.
No.
I can agree with that.
she's a bit out of her depth in this one. And like, I mean, there's like that modern problem where it's like that you watch a period piece and it's like, it's, you can tell that somebody has a face that's seen an iPhone. I think Winona like doesn't necessarily quite have that, but she does look like she's been in a mall. She just like, and this act, the accent work from her like looks good next to Keanu, but
I disagree, but... Josh. I disagree. Watching this again, this is like my fourth time in my life. I wrote down, I was kind of keeping track of the bad lines, and she wins. Like hers were, I think she has a worse worse accent than he does.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm sorry to say. And again, I love her. I think, you know, nothing bad against her. It just wasn't her finest hour.
Yeah, and she found the script, and you know, she did her part to make a movie that we like. It's just maybe she shouldn't have been in.
I feel like Jen's Keanu boner is showing.
I will defend him to the death. He is a treasure. Yeah.
I think he's a tremendous person, and he has very niche roles that he can excel in.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think he's been in an Eli Roth movie, so you're not gonna win this argument against Jen.
Oh God. Anyway, let's move on.
Well, the only thing I want to say with like Keanu is like, because like they asked Francis Ford Coppola about it, and he was very generous about his answer. He said like, oh, he tried so hard, and it's just like, it's just you can tell that he's trying. Even if he is hitting it correctly, it's just a lot of effort and thought behind it.
I think he has gotten vastly better over the years. But I think that doing this sort of work requires more experience than maybe he had at the time.
Perhaps, however, I would argue that the role of Jonathan Harker was meant to be played as he played it. I don't think he was meant to be a very worldly person.
No one's suggesting that Jonathan Harker's not a potato.
I'm sorry. I'm still a little bit defensive about Keanu right now because of this whole Matthew Perry thing that I don't, let's not even get into it.
That's not what this show's about.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, just because for the sake of this bit that I want to do, maybe he could have tried like a different accent that would be like less challenging than like the middle class kind of like perfect elocution accent that he's going for. Like, the novel's written by an Irish guy, so maybe you could have been Johnny Harker. Face of Gora. Holy Dracula. Would that have salvaged it a little bit if it just every time he was on screen?
I would have enjoyed it more.
No, would have taken me out of it.
We also got we got Anthony Hopkins here. We got Van Helsing. So
I mean, where's it? Pretty unhinged character in this movie.
Oh, he's fantastic.
That is like the best Van Helsing take I find, is like the unhinged nut who's like one conspiracy theory turns out to actually be right. Mm-hmm. And he's insufferable about it.
So happy that he's correct.
Mm-hmm.
He like was apparently given direction to like read the book and study and do more rehearsing, and he said, I will not be doing those things. I will narrate for you. I'll be the priest. But no thank you. are there any other, I think the other person I really want to just call attention to, because I don't want to go too long in this part too late, is Renfield. We got Tom Waits. Tom Waits in this piece. Just I don't want to say I forgot this performance because it's been a while since I've seen it, but I just maybe forgot the volume and acceleration that he plays this with.
Mm-hmm.
I could be incorrect, but I think Renfield has a bigger part to play in the novel than he does in the movie.
I think he does, because I haven't reached that part of the novel yet, but I know the one thing that's like an invention of Nosferatu and they keep in this movie is that he's not connected to the whole like land deal plot. He's just like a guy at the asylum who like feels the call of Dracula. I can only assume that Tom Waits accepted this role on a derelict payphone shortly after writing a Zydeco-based song about a blind hobo's dog dying outside of a circus. That seems like like a typical day for Tom Waits right here.
I enjoy this performance a lot.
You know, it is in contention for award season at the end of this podcast.
Oh, right? Boy.
we talked a little bit about this intro up top. Like, I know you were like pretty impressed with it. What do you think about, we talked about like so Vlad Dracula goes and fights in a war. He's not supposed to win.
Wins.
He wins, but, his enemies, pass false information to his new bride and she kills herself thinking him dead. And he returns home to find her a suicide and the church saying that she's condemned herself. And, he renounces God and stabs the cross. And, what do you think about this origin? What do you think about this origin story for Dracula created for the movie?
I actually love it. I think this is fucking intense as hell.
I have a couple of questions that I'll save for the end because it really comes into play more at the end. But I agree, I really like it. But I just
I don't know if this is where you're going. I maybe have some questions about the theology of this movie.
No, exactly. So, but logically, in this origin story scene, he renounces God, stabs a cross, and then bam, Dracula. Dracula, one, by the way. Number one.
Are we counting this Dracula and other young sexy Dracula as same Draculas? I just want to know as we're doing tallies.
They are not
the
same. This
is number one, just sexy Dracula.
Okay. Maybe we can do like a sexiness ranking at the end.
Well, I know who wins.
Yeah, the hair bun Dracula, of course. With his hairy palms from what have you been doing, Dracula? all up in this castle by yourself. we get our great font choice here for 1992 font drop for the title. So the background of this it's the same as like the Dracula, all the other Dracula stories is that Dracula's in Transylvania and they're he's buying up property in England. So young solicitor, our Keanu, Jonathan Harker, travels to Transylvania, leaves behind his fiance, Mina Harker, or Mina something else at this time. Mm-hmm. forget her last name before she marries him.
Do they ever give us an explanation for why Dracula is buying up land in London?
He's going to open Airbnbs. I don't know. I think he knows there's something calling to him there that's confirmed when he sees Mina's picture. And I don't think the book, like, unless I haven't gotten there yet, like, I don't think the book really gives him a motive other than just like,
I don't recall. I don't recall either. I mean, like I said, it's been a long time since I read the book. I don't recall there being a real explicit reason given. I think I always kind of assumed it was just like he's tired of being on the edge of nowhere and kind of wants to get back into the swing of things a little bit.
Oh, no, I just assumed it was he had honed in on Mina and was circling her quite literally.
Yeah, because it definitely seems like once Harker's there and he sees the picture, he's got a lock on her. And
I wasn't sure if he had any ideas about her being a thing until he saw the picture, though. That's unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't think I think one of the things I really like about this version is it's like, and it's again sort of like what seems to be the case in the novel is that like there are kind of rules for vampires, but there's like the world doesn't work right around them. And like the rules don't always apply. It's like what they can do and what they're weak against or what stops them is kind of uncertain.
I love the representation of all of his powers and all the spooky stuff that goes on around the fringes, like the coachman who just kind of backhand lifts up Jonathan and puts him in the wagon behind him.
Oh, that's, I think that might be my favorite scene. His demon Uber to the castle, like with the wolves and that gate of blue fire and just his looking over the side of the cliff. And it's so creepy. I love it.
I love how much it like kind of calls back to like early, even if I like, don't necessarily love those movies. I think maybe I just like a callback.
He's like understanding a reference.
Yeah,
I get that thing. I think you had mentioned too, there's like a lot of stuff in this part where it's like it's keeping that epistolary form. So it's got like his journal entry, like then the journal page, and then the trains in the background, and then like the eyes are in the sky above that. Like
it's a very busy scene.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's all stuff that like, you know, like we mentioned is like in camera. It's all stuff that like they would have had access to like making Nosferatu basically, except for that blue flame. It's the one post effect that they did.
That was pretty good.
It's pretty amazing. And like the next like half hour of the movie is Harker basically trapped in Dracula's castle as Dracula's like
wait Josh, number two Dracula. Mr. Burns Dracula.
Call him D.
The drip on this outfit is astonishing. The like the floor length cape that he's just casually wearing around the castle.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think that train behind him is?
Oh god, I don't know.
Like 12 feet at least. Conservatively. And, you know, just...
This is another logical jump for me though that I had a problem with is like, so he's ostensibly, yes, he's the same Dracula, right? Yeah. Why does he look about 20 or 30 years older than sexy Dracula when he's just been undead and the whole time? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that never made sense to me. Like, he's been alive for 400 years, but yet he's aged only 20? I don't.
I think it also kind of just depends on, like, what he wants to look like, what he wants to expend the effort to do, and like
now that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a matter of he has to expend energy to do things.
I see.
And okay, he doesn't need to do that while he's just out in the middle of nowhere.
Gotcha.
And like, I think most of the best lines in the movie happen in this like window of Harker figuring out things are amiss there. Like,
at the very least, a lot of my favorite things happen here.
Yeah. Yeah. The
shadows.
The strange greeting, the shadows, the. Yeah. Like, I mean, was there a particular shadow effect that, because there's a few of them that you liked more than others? Or is there one that stood out to you?
Honestly, the stuff with the shadows that I liked the most was the real subtle stuff where it was just barely apparent that the shadow wasn't moving with him. I didn't really like the whole overt stuff where the shadow was like kind of strangling Jonathan Harker.
And that was what I liked the best.
But I liked how like it was just like a frame off of his actual movements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I also sort of like it as like a signifier that he's present later on when Harker goes and meets the brides. Like he goes downstairs and he's exploring down there, and then there's like the shadow that follows that's like very similar to the one that we've seen. Because we know that like Dracula has told him, like, don't go wandering off and exploring the castle. It would be terrible.
Right.
Don't go to sleep anywhere anyway. Leaving the door unlocked. Here's the keys. But it's like I think it's just so like disarming, like how he can be like, even in this like weird, creepy makeup, he can like just go back and forth from like charming you and terrifying you like on a dime. It's like he goes from being a congenial and kind of deferential host to like pulling a sword.
Right. Yeah. Throwing a sword point. Yeah.
Like any rich predator.
or not so subtly threatening Keanu while he's shaving him.
Oh, yeah, that's a Griswell.
Just holding his head back so the blades across his throat.
And that's like, you know, we get like some more of the traditional vampire stuff there. The mirror, him not showing up in the reflection and shattering it and getting scared off by the cross. But I think my favorite thing is the when he's shaving him they're pushing the walls of the room in to make it smaller. Mm-hmm. I think in that reflection.
There's so much cool stuff in this opening scene. The reaching across the room to touch him on the shoulder when he turns around, he's still at the door with his arms full. Just so much unsettling stuff.
I think that's basically all I've read in the novel so far, and it's like it's that part's all like right there. That's like basically like all the stuff that happens in this is straight from the book, and without a ton of like changes or you know, a lot of the dialogue works the same, or just the sequence of things like him crawling outside the window and being seen doing like the spider climb, which like again, like come on man, you can turn into mist, like you gotta be rolling Spider-Man style down this wall.
That's a punchy ass stretch.
But like the basic gist of it is that he's like initially thinking he's just gonna be there to close this deal, and Dracula like imprisons him. He just makes him write up letters to friends and colleagues and to Mina and says, you know, that you're let everybody know that you're gonna be like a month. But by the time he gets everything like set up in motion and is ready to go to London with the aid of his ethnic slurs that I will repeat on the show.
The gypsies?
Jonathan Harker briefly becomes Borat. And I think that's also like product of the times. And I
absolutely mean
both the 1890s and the 1990s.
We do
cross cut a bit here back to Mina, who's staying with her friend Lucy, who's Sadie Frost is also pretty amazing in this role. She's
fantastic. Yeah,
she's definitely outperforming Winona.
Yeah, I think some of the furniture is outperforming
Winona. This is when I wrote down a quote from when she's talking about how Jonathan doesn't think she'll be content. I will not be content as the wife of a mere clerk in a law firm. Oh, she says clock.
Clark. A clerk.
Well, he actually applied.
Three times.
He applied to be a Clark Griswold. He was. I'm assuming that's probably also like take 34. It's like, well, I guess it's just Clark.
She just can't do it.
But she's staying with her friend Lucy. Sadie Frost apparently showed up to hair with her like Lucy hair already. It was just like, anything else needed? And they were like, no, you good. And nice. Waved her out the door. So that's a that was a pure choice on her part, and it looks pretty amazing in this film. But I think my favorite thing here that Winona says is the Jonathan says it's a defect of the aristocracy that they say what they please, and like that is way too clever for Jonathan Harker. So Jonathan Harker be like, well, rich people are showy. Like, I don't know about that. There's no clever turn of phrase from Jonathan Harker that our wet toilet paper roll of a protagonist. But we established that Lucy is, you know,
living her best life.
She's got three men chasing her. You know, trying to, you know, a beautiful rich woman who seems like eager to move on to the honeymoon phase of her life has three suitors. What a shock. what a surprise. And she has like the Rocketeer as one of her suitors. She has Prince Wesley as one of her suitors. And then like Richard E. Grant, the heroin shooting doctor who trips over the bear rug, like he's got to be like, I'm doing great, I'm in first place.
He's just happy to be there.
Dr. Seward. That's you know, don't call him that though. That's it's I will see you next Tuesday. But yeah, like I'm wondering what y'all think about the function of these characters, because I'm curious that they kept this from the novel, and most of the other adaptations kind of wrap all these characters up into one. They're like, that's too much character. That's too much.
I don't know.
Like three dudes that are.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I read the novel several times, so it didn't seem strange to me to have the three of them there. Yeah. Like, because that's how it was in the book. So I guess it didn't strike me as odd.
A lot of the other adaptations don't do that. I think it kind of creates like a cool mirroring a little bit with Jonathan's about to get captured by the bride. So he's got these like three women coming after him. And then you've got the three suitors pursuing Lucy.
And they kind of become the cavalry later, not to spoil anything. But yeah, I think to me, that's the purpose is they need a group.
They need bodies.
Yeah,
that's but I think it also like, I don't know, it kind of reads to me a little bit like the because Jonathan gets sent down to the brides to basically be seduced by them, and then they're just gonna like keep him on hand until they're done with him, because Dracula has left for London at that point. But it's this like, it's this weird mirroring of the courtship thing where it's Jonathan Harker's kind of more in like the passive role in that scenario. He's kind of the bride to the brides, and
I think I would be more on board with that if Mina on the other side of the equation instead of her friend, because it's just like one step removed. I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure that I can fully get on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely stuff. There's a lot going on with like kind of the expectations, and like class figures into it a lot, because as she's saying, like Lucy can kind of, if she behaves this way, it's like an affectation, or she's like, she's just eccentric when Mina can't assume that role, even though like they have that scene where they're both like tittering over the 1001 Arabian Nights, and Lucy's really, you find out she's kind of just pretending to be more worldly. Like they both kind of have the same level of expertise in the man and in the manner. So yeah, I think it's just an interesting playfulness there with kind of the expectation. But Dracula has reached out to, he knows Mina is the reincarnation of his beloved. He has seen her picture and touched her mind, and travels by boat on the Demeter. We get the narration here as he leaves the castle. I guess before we talk about that, you want to dip into this this seduction of Jonathan Harker scene a little bit, because it's pretty good.
The only thing I really wanted to point out about that one is just that, in the documentary, they said a little bit about this, and it's something that's always struck me, was just the movement of the vampire harem, how it's very insect-like. And I guess that's what they were going for with the choreography, and goddamn if it didn't work. You know, it's always just really struck me as like they look like an insect when they move together, which I always thought was really cool.
And you know, not to belabor but Monica Bellucci bites Keanu Reeves on the dick, right?
That's what I'm getting. That's what I got.
Suggested.
I mean, that's a good spot to do it if you got them all ready to go.
Don't kink shame, Josh.
I mean, I don't know if Keanu knew the safe word for that one.
I'm just saying, as a vampire, you would think they would know where most of the blood goes.
But like they're called off at least temporarily, as Dracula comes floating into the room and like sates them by providing the baby, a baby for them to consume.
This is probably the most overtly evil that he is in this movie.
Yeah. Is this when he's wearing the gold outfit? Is he wearing
No. He's still in red here.
Okay.
Yeah, and like another UK accent that Keanu could have tried out for this. Like, get in my belly. Yeah.
I want my baby back.
Again. He's trying.
It's been too long since we've had a good Austin Powers reference on the show. What we're primarily known for.
That's fair.
Largely what we do.
Ooh, what about like a Jason Statham accent? Like he's like, "All right, Dracula, bruv." would that work?
Cockney rhyming slang, which I'm not going to attempt.
Me Marcus, I live in brave. it's pretty much immediately after the bride scene when he's getting ready to like move to London though that he pops up in the gold suit. They do the homage to the original, the Nosferatu of him popping out of the coffin.
I wanted to say about that one, that costume was based on the Klimt painting, The Kiss. They really wanted to try to somehow pay homage to that painting with that costume. And I think when you know that and you look at it, you can see it. But I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I did not realize this until recently, but my partner apparently has a Klimt sketch that is
an original
frame. Apparently he did many of them. And gave them out to people as payment. So it's not like a super valuable piece, but it's an original. So
that's awesome.
Pretty sweet. So the sea voyage that he goes on, he has to travel with his, you know, with the dirt from his castle, with his unholy ground.
It's not dirt. It's earth. That's what Keanu says. Why do they fill these boxes with earth?
Jeez, way to drag him for his accent. That's, man.
Again, I did not say that it was his finest hour. I just not as bad as her, so.
He was snubbed at the Oscars.
This is always like kind of one of my favorite parts of like other Dracula stories. I think they do it okay here, where it's the he ends up going into like the wolf form and
number three.
He's got like the
number three Wolfman Dracula.
Yeah, he's kind of reconstituting himself on the ship as he's like feeding on all the sailors, and it's the journal entry from the captain. Like I know it's been a while since you've read it, but I think in the novel, isn't it like the captain the only one left alive, and he's just basically like kept in a stupor and like standing up and manning the wheel.
Yeah, he's the only one left because somebody had to steer.
Yeah.
Dracula wasn't going to do manual labor.
I think the vampire as metaphor for the upper class. Like,
I mean, this is something that like the image of the like the ghost ship drifting into harbor is something that gets used a whole lot, and I'm not sure that this is the very first time it's brought up in any sort of media, but it's got to be an early one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. When's the one with the albatross? That's older, right? Like the
specifically like the creepy empty boat blowing in on a storm tossed sea with no one aboard, maybe one survivor.
I mean, I in so much as I feel like in Victorian England, maybe that like that was a monthly occurrence. Or another scurvy boat.
It's a Tuesday.
He gets to Whitby and just immediately, I know, like, I think Dracula's got some strong, like, pickup artist energy, and he's just trying to, like, nag Mina to get her to like him, because the first thing he does is, like, magically get her friend to come outside and have sex with her as a wolf. Like, that's a real pickup. That's like knowing a close-up magic trick. It's a big pickup artist move. Just, you gotta find her friend, hypnotize her in night count and have sex with her in a maze, then make your target watch. bold move, Dracula.
I mean, it worked.
But like there's the like chaos there too, like the zoo animals escape, there's all that like cool stuff. Ren,
I love the breadth of his power.
Mm-hmm.
they really go out of their way to display how much of like a force of nature he is.
Yeah, even the juxtaposition of like while he's still coming in on the boat, and Mina and Lucy are playing outside in the rain, and they start just, they become almost ecstatic, and you get a real sense that, like, it's because of him, and, like...
Yeah. He brought the rain. You see his eyes in the sky.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. That's, so, like, he meets her on the street, and now he's, like, they do the narration with, like,
urban, yeah, we're sexy Dracula.
It's steampunk Dracula.
You just call him Prince.
No, urban sexy.
I was a little disappointed that they show these newspapers and the newspapers didn't spin. I was like, not buying this part. If the papers don't spin, how will I know?
It's like extra.
I like the part where, like, at the very beginning of this particular scene where he's walking down the street and it's like presented as though it were an old timey movie, like you got the stuttering camera motion and the clack of the reels in the background. It's just like him returning and to modern life.
Yeah, and that's where they're going too. And I think, like, I kind of get the sense from the interviews and stuff that Coppola did that, like, part of his excitement of doing a Dracula movie is that, like, there's been so many, like, iconic ones, and then it's sort of like the development of film as well. So you get to play with, like, German expressionist stuff, you get to play with, like, Golden Age Hollywood stuff, like, all those techniques. He, like, brings them all back. It's all stuff
I believe it's actually kind of one of the themes of the novel is, like, technology and like the film stuff coming up. Like, Dracula is very, he's impressed with all the how things have moved forward since he was gone.
I'm trying to get into crypto.
Well, he says something to Mina in here about how incredible science is. Like, I don't remember the exact line. Yeah. I think that's actually, you know, kind of a big thing in the book.
Well, like, capturing something on film is giving a life.
Right.
And this is also when we learn that he can move about by day, which did they mention this in the book? Like, is this a departure, or is this faithful to the book
it's been a long time, but he does. I mean, this is something that happens in the book. So they must have either that wasn't part of the lore, or they explain it kind of the same way they do in the movie, where they say, you know, maybe you've heard that they can't, but they can. They just are a little negatively impacted in their powers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was kind of more the idea, is that, like, he can't, like, turn into rats and mist during the day, but he could be, like, he could don a top hat.
He can certainly wear clothes.
Okay.
The scene where they go to, like, the theater, just casually showing some porn in the back. some topless women, and and then that, like, immediately transitions into, like, the train coming at the camera scene, like equally thrilling to the 1897 audience.
I was gonna say, how long has it been since you've seen that train coming at the camera? Because, I mean, they did show the topless thing as, like, a kind of a preview. It's like a Pixar movie where they have the shorts in the beginning. It's titties, then train.
Gotta save the train for the grand finale.
Yeah.
Because there are no limits to science. Gary Oldman did say that he only took this role because he didn't have, like, a special fondness for Dracula to be able to say the line, "I have crossed oceans of time to find you."
It's a very powerful line.
It's a good line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and a good read. Better than mine. They decide that they're going to get to know each other a little bit better, because Winona, like, recognizes him, and also, like, he tames a wolf in front of her. That's a power move.
Well, there's a cut back to Lucy, though, in between, where we know that she's fallen. Yes. She's fallen very ill, and it's the first time we see her in her wedding dress, which looks like some kind of tree skirt.
With a lace collar that's, all popped up. Yeah.
It's like a dog collar, isn't it? It looks like an Elizabethan dog collar. But
the color shame.
It's beautiful, but we know she's very, very sick, and they've called Van Helsing. Or they haven't called him. They didn't text him. They sent him a letter.
I have some questions about the timeline in this movie.
I don't know. Like it, I feel like it kind of hand waves it. I feel like it's also like that style as substance thing. But yeah, it does seem like.
I mean,
Lucy goes from dying to dead, from like perfectly healthy to dying to dead, like instantly, while there's like just these dates going on.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not a big enough thing to take me out of it, but it is something that, in hindsight, it's like, so when exactly does this stuff, like, how do they fit all this stuff in? It feels like they're jumping around a lot, or skipping over some stuff, or maybe like remixing the order of some things.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they got to make their edits somewhere. I think it's pretty skillful. It keeps you like moving along, and you don't like. Well, I think maybe later.
I don't mind it. It doesn't take me out. It's just if you're looking at it, it does. I wouldn't blame someone for having questions.
Sure.
Yeah, because it it seems like the relationship that's developing between Dracula and Mina is like very short, but like you're saying, like they're also like writing to Van Helsing and like. I don't know. Maybe he's just at the college down the street and they just send a courier and they can come instantly. But
there's a scene when Mina is going to Jonathan after he escapes. And she's like throwing all the correspondence between her and Dracula into the ocean. And she's got like stacks and stacks of letters.
I know.
I mean, that does seem like a goal at some point. Like I want to stand on like an ocean liner, just crying and throwing letters off of the side, and let's just Publishers Clearinghouse junk mail. I just took to shred. I do like the intro of Van Helsing, where he's just basically talking about like
where he's in bat class,
in the class talking about STDs
like how civilization.
Clever pun. Yeah, and then he gets, you're right, though, that I didn't think about that, but the timing of that telegram, like, yeah, it was very, very quick when he got it, like, in class. It seemed like it, anyway.
Yeah, and he comes sprinting to the aid. Maybe to jump ahead a little bit, but I do love that, like, again, like, to get back into the stage magic stuff, that, like, Van Helsing, like, proves his point to the suitors that there's a vampire at play by, like, disappearing, by, like...
He pulls a
hey everyone, look over there. See, the supernatural exists. I'm behind this grave now.
I picture him waiting for everyone to turn their heads and then sprinting away.
But Mina and Dracula start going on some dates, and she's like recollecting her past life and like starting to give in to the urge, and this is where we get this
I forgot. When he had the wolf, I had a heavy petting joke, but I missed it. I'm going to leave it alone now.
Let's let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't go back.
I do like that one of their dates is just Dracula taking her to go like get fucked up on absinthe. That's
he doesn't partake.
He doesn't drink absinthe. But this like, it does serve as like a way for Mina to kind of get into that liminal space and recollect her past life as she starts to like hallucinate. And I like a lot of the dialogue in this movie, her saying like, I see a land beyond the forest, when that's like the literal translation of Transylvania. Maybe not my favorite.
No, Josh, I wrote this one down too, because she says a land beyond a great, vast forest.
There's the other like really cool effect here too, where she's like crying at their parting, and the tears turn to diamonds.
What is she seeing Jonathan at this point?
Well, I mean, like Jonathan, I guess like what he can list on his resume is like didn't drain all the life out of your best friend. That's what he is.
A plus is a plus, you know. And I think that we have had a couple other like cuts back to Lucy, just deteriorating more and more too. She's basically like a better dressed version of Reagan from The Exorcist at this point. Like she's just writhing around and hissing and
Oh sure, yeah.
Well, because also with her as she's getting weaker, she's also like saying that she's like able to like hear the mice and the servants whispering. And I think we also haven't mentioned too that we've seen Renfield a few more times, like after just his life feeds on life and I want a kitten and actually I'm going to strangle you.
Yeah.
Doctor with I don't think they ever really give an explanation for why he's wearing like the finger cages that he's wearing. Is he like a habitual nose picker? Is that a
I don't know.
It's a wild set of like wire gauntlets that he's wearing all times.
Look, back then medicine was still a developing science.
Humors involved and like
exactly.
You know, a lot of self-testing of morphine apparently. How will I know if it works for my patients if I don't try it? How do I figure out the dosages otherwise? Yeah, Dr. Seward. yeah, at this point, Jonathan, who's been drained by the brides, is able to gather up enough strength and make his brave, daring escape, stumble through the woods and find a convent and finally reach out and get word to Mina. And Mina goes to travel to him. She renounces her lust for Dracul. Right at the same time that Lucy kicks the bucket too. That's the triggering moment. Dracula gets mad and takes a final bite out of Lucy, because right now the guys suspect vampires because of Van Helsing, the suitors, but they haven't actually seen the thing yet. They've just seen like the shadow form and done like the blood transfusions and stuff. So
and there are two more Draculas here.
Okay. So
there's
number
five.
Bad Dracula.
No, number five, which I just named Ugly Cry Dracula.
Sad Dracula.
Where he's instead like...
instead of Glad Dracula.
He's just summoning the Vins, you know? Like, in that scene.
Yeah, and that's what causes Van Helsing to realize that he actually is onto something.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, the next thing I wrote is, yes, Van Helsing is jazzed because he knows he's up against the villain he's been chasing his whole life. Just
ecstatically telling the people that the woman that they love is going to turn into a whore of the devil.
And then I think we get a new number six Wolf Dracula. Just not Wolf Man, but just Wolf Dracula.
Oh, where he just turns into a wolf through the window?
Yeah.
All right.
And there's like the shadow Dracula. I mean, I guess he's had the shadow that it's been independent before, but he's like literally the shadow in the room that retreats. There's that one too.
Count. I didn't count that one.
Are you counting the mist or the rats?
Yes, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
You're jumping ahead.
We got Wolfman Drac.
We're only at six right now.
I like to imagine that both Van Helsing and Dracula were shopping for candles at the same store that Carrie's mom does. Because Dracula summons wind! Candles blow out. Lucy dies, but did she know? Did she die? No. Van Helsing knows that they need to go check the gravesite and all the fellows are.
I love how he tells Dr. Seward.
I know. I need you to
find me some knives. You're gonna do an autopsy? Sort of. We're gonna remove her head and her heart.
My favorite. I just want to cut off her head and take out her heart. What?
He's so matter of fact.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite scene in the movie when they go into the crypt and she's got that glass coffin that's like already baller. She's buried in her wedding dress, like hell yeah. And then when they find the tomb empty, they wait for her and she comes down and like all the candles are blowing out as she's coming down and she's bringing the child with her.
Mm-hmm. No, they're coming back. They're lighting back up.
Yeah. Yeah, when they do the cross and get her back into the coffin.
Wait, again, before that, as soon as they confront her, she turns around and immediately drops the child and tries to seduce her fiance.
the child
makes when hits the ground is hilarious.
Yeah, that's trying to get him to say as you wish. the spell is broken with the cross, because the strength of Christ is strong, and this is all filmed backwards, so it's like it's her coming out of the coffin filmed in reverse, which is why it looks so strange.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I love like the like all white and all serene feel of the scene before she just bursts up all the blood everywhere. It's not my favorite Mel Brooks movie, but the lampooning of this and Dracula Dead and loving it is pretty great.
Didn't we go see that in the theaters, like just the two of us?
We may have. Leslie Nielsen cashing those checks, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do as they say, and Dracula like feels that too. Not only like is Van Helsing like, oh, we've got to do this, but also like, hey, fiance, you're up.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing the staking, and they chop off her head, and it's like, it is glorious.
Smash cut.
They also know. Yeah, it's a celebration, just cutting meat. I mean, it's not quite the Friday the 13th, what am I, a fart head transition. That's an all time. Or speaking of Monica Bellucci, the other Monica Bellucci transition from from Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Enough said.
So a couple other things happen here. Like Mina goes to reunite with Jonathan, and they get married. And they used authentic Orthodox church and had the clergy actually conduct this ceremony. So Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves married in the eyes of God. That was a real real marriage ceremony they had.
I feel like the church may have had like issues with doing that.
No, they'll marry anybody.
Okay. Yeah, famously, right?
But yeah, I think like this back bit of the movie has like cool stuff in it, but I will admit, I think it kind of slides off a bit in like the back third. Are y'all kind of in a similar boat with me on that?
No, to me, I think it's pretty consistent. There's not really a section. Yeah, no, I can't think of a section that drags for me at all. I've been riveted by this entire thing for.
I can think of scenes that don't hit as hard as other scenes, but I think there is generally a consistent level.
I don't think it's bad. I think it hits so hard, and so I feel like it's so front loaded with such great stuff that the stuff at the tail end doesn't hit as hard for me. But that might be kind of the where other filmmakers have had some success trimming the number of characters, because just like these three doofuses wandering around for a bit following Van Helsing, all actors I like really enjoy and like, but they're not really given a lot to do other than be heroin doctor, be Texan, and be Carrie Elwes.
That's fair.
So they go to Carfax Abbey to destroy the boxes of soil. There's also like the warning that Renfield gives, because like when he sees Mina, when Mina comes like with
they decide to hide her across the street
in the asylum. Yeah, good plan, guys.
I also really want to shout out to the old age makeup that they put on Keanu to like show the trauma that he's been through. It's pretty. For most of the other makeup in this movie being like A+, it is very like spray on gray hair.
It's the can that you get at CVS for Halloween. It's, yeah.
It's what they did in Dial Code Santa.
It's the spray snow.
Yes. It's what he puts on his hair.
But they're destroying the soil. We don't know yet, but there's one box that survives. Because Dracula's out busy for the moment. He attacks, he kills Renfield for daring to give the warning.
We get number 7, Batman Dracula.
Yes.
And who quickly turns number
Mist.
8, Smoke Dracula, or Mist Dracula, whatever you prefer.
Dank Dracula.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, the ripped cotton Dracula. Which, like, it's there's the Renfield one, but there's also the mist when he comes up for Mina, and I think that effect also absolutely rules. That's mm-hmm. that is so cool. Like the green mist coming up over like the landscape and then coming into the window. Mm-hmm. And I guess they composited that. Like they filmed the smoke and then just were real mindful of like where they set the camera for the setups to get it to like follow correctly. So like pretty sweet magic tricky way to do it. So Mina and Dracula reunite. Mm-hmm. And Mina's on board.
She gets a little bit pissed.
I was gonna say there's some conflict there. She's not happy.
Yeah, because like, by the way, remember your friend I was having sex with? Well,
she gets over that real fast. You know, hey, some you know you can't choose who you love, right? Yeah.
But yeah, the not only are they reunited, but she wants the whole thing. She wants the whole Dracula. So they exchange some fluids. We get the cut open of the prosthetic here is it's all right. It's okay.
We got to talk about it. it's my one problem. That's the fakest looking nipple I've ever seen. Like it's the same exact color as the rest of his skin. It's just it always makes me laugh. Like I don't know.
There's a scene earlier, I think, in the three vampire lady orgy with Keanu where there's a nipple involved, and I'm not sure if that's a real nipple or not either.
Anyway, apparently they blew all their budget on costumes and had nothing left for
on fake nipples.
Nipple funds, yeah.
They just paint over it. It's an old Roger Corman trick. I guess that's maybe the one thing that like Roger Corman would never cut budget on.
Exactly.
The beauty of the human nipple. But yeah, they're reunited, and this movie doesn't have a lot of jump scares in it, but boy do I like this one. That when all the men come up to check in on Mina, mm-hmm. and where she's on the bed still like making out with where Dracula was, but then there's the jump in of Bat Dracula off from the side, which Gary Oldman helped like design this makeup. Like he showed up in rehearsal and then hated it. He was like very angry at himself for how good he wanted this to look because it was torturous to get in and out of. Crosses attempted to be used here. And maybe the most metal a Dracula has ever been.
Number 9, Rat Dracula.
That cross bursts into flame, baby. Your trinkets are meaningless. He dips out. But they realize that they're connected now. So Van Helsing hypnotizes Mina. And learns that he's heading home in his last box, so they're gonna chase him across Europe to go stop him.
I would argue this is number 10, I believe, which I call Old Dirty Dracula, because it doesn't look the same as any of the other versions that we've seen. And I get that maybe he's just like tired at this point, but to me it's a different.
Yeah, and it's a cool like cross cut thing where we see like the box and we see like him. In the box from then going forward where he's like buried with like his face and some of his hands sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool little bit there. They decide they're going to split up. The boys are going to go, try to chase the travelers that are moving them down. And, Van Helsing and Mina are going to head towards the castle and the pass.
I would say that this is a part that I did not particularly like. It seems like it's written as it's supposed to be like an exciting chase, like and like full of pressure and intense. Who's going to get back to the castle first? Are they going to get there? But the distances they're traveling and the time frame that the travel will take just kind of deflates it for me.
Maybe because I have such a bad understanding of geography and anything having to do with directions. And I love this scene because I just love the race against the sun, you know, how they keep juxtaposing like
that part at the end, the like window, right at the castle is awesome. Like when you're trying to beat the sunrise, the sunset down there, but like up to it where they're talking about how, oh, he fooled us. He, instead of coming to this place, he went to this place. Oh, and I was going overland. And it's like, maybe just do like an Indiana Jones thing here.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, they kind of do that. They kind of do the map with the dot, dot, dots going across it as they're moving. So yeah. I got some strong indie vibes off of that. But maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit, you don't need to be this faithful to the book.
Right. It was a little like they could have cut all that out and just paid more attention to the race to the sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, I think that's another, that's the more important part anyway.
Yeah. Well, we do get the bit here where Mina, kind of under the influence or of her own transformation and the bride's nearby, starts to try to seduce Van Helsing, which, yeah, I think like maybe goes about as well for her as like anybody trying to seduce this like choked up Anthony Hopkins Van Helsing performance would go. presses the communion wafer onto her head that burns her and then ends up warding off the brides with the circle of fire.
And then watches as they tear his horse apart.
But they gotta go to sleep sometime.
I know.
It's just so bad.
I really wanted those three to have their own spinoff, but obviously, like, that's not gonna happen. Because then he cuts all their heads off and throws them off a cliff.
Very unceremoniously. Like it's got the crazed energy, but it's like, well, okay.
It's like, how did you think this was gonna go? I just wasn't gonna do anything about that.
But we do get this like final confrontation here. We get, I think this it just takes a little bit to get to it, and I feel like it's the, like you were saying, I think this is kind of the part where it gets a little muddy for me. They get into the fight with like the hunters and the travelers, you can say it, Josh, the gypsies. And that's I'm not going to throw the money. This bit where they have the sun coming down and then Dracula bursts out. It's a cool confrontation here at the end. But I also feel like it's like maybe a little condensed. Like it's for all the powers and stuff that Dracula has, it's like
it did seem a little anticlimactic, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he gets like the wounds, like he's able to kill off our Quincy P. Morris, our Texan, our cartoonish Texan with a giant knife. Mm-hmm. But he gets wounded and staggers inside. And like at this point, kind of the spell is broken on Mina. So she's able to go in and they have this romantic death throes moment where I think this is maybe like, do you want to get into like the theology stuff of this now? Because it seems like
Because this really
Dracula just gets good with God.
I mean, I never took it that way before, but watching it this time, I was very confused by it because seemingly what happens is, you know, she, oh my God, what is it? She like understands that, or does he, I can't remember the exact order. Does he say first something about how his God has forsaken him? So then he's kind of like, seeing that he's willing to accept God again, she all of a sudden understands. She says, there in the presence of God, I understood how my love could release us all from the power of darkness. And then he turns into a spitting image of Jesus paintings. So this
was like the light from the heavens across his eyes. Yes. He gets like the key lighting.
The only explanation is that he accepted God or Jesus, right? And then was released from being undead?
It's weird because he never actually does that.
I know.
Yeah, it's like her love or something, and it's like then they show the like the fresco on the ceiling where it's like Vlad and Elisabetta like together with kind of the implication like, well, Dracula is in heaven now.
Yeah.
Which like I get that he's the anti-hero of this movie, and he's like more interesting and like hot than our like ostensible male protagonist, but like also, I mean, like, it doesn't seem like going to heaven is the,
like, the it's ending. A real tragic story that I don't see how could end with him going like to heaven.
No, and then if he does, why does she cut off his head?
You gotta be sure.
Just insurance?
Just
stamping
I think so.
That ticket.
I don't know. I was very confused by the ending in a way that I never have been, and I want to look up a lot more about it. I was just rewatching it again before we.
It seems weird that they would just kind of give him a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know this movie did not test well. There was a lot of fears that it would bomb because I guess the initial cut was gorier and longer.
Okay.
And they after like the bad testing, they trimmed it from like 2.5 hours to just over 2 hours to land on where. I don't know if they've ever. I don't know if any of the special editions, I could have looked that up, but I didn't have any of the extra stuff on them that was cut out. But yeah, like I kind of wonder if like framing it as the love story and making Dracula your compelling lead traps you into making some sort of happy ending. But like it's, I don't know, it's a weird it's a weird juxtaposition with the guy what. Wolf raped somebody, like fed babies to someone.
Yeah. And then I think it's just more than anything, it's just the fact that he looks exactly like
Jesus.
Yes. And
he's fighting for Christendom. He looks like he did at the beginning, and it's kind of that's just the style of the time. Everyone looked like Jesus.
I don't know. Anyway.
I want to look like Chris Cornell circa now. So is there more stuff y'all want to hit on in the on this one before we get into Sales Country? I know we're kind of going a little long.
No, let's count up our Draculas. We had 10 total.
10 Draculas from my point of view.
Okay. Did we count rats? Did we count rats? Let's
I counted rats. Rat Dracula. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only one in that list that I think maybe there could be another one is like the proto Dracula on the ship where they show him kind of like in a chrysalis.
Oh.
But that's not really a character so much. It's just like something they show in transition.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't really do anything. It's just something they show on the screen. So I don't know if you would want to include that or not. But it is a different look for him.
Okay. I think I missed that. So there's 11.
There's a scene where it looks like he's in a wet plastic bag.
No, I would definitely count that.
He's like the Chia Pet Dracula. You've sprayed the stuff on it, and you need to cover it with like the bag to get it to grow.
Yeah.
Or an unborn stingray.
Yeah. Sell on this one. I'm not going to go super long. I'm just going to, like, if I had to sum this up real quick, I likes me a risky big budget movie that you don't see a lot of anymore. This is like, I think, an argument for also style as substance because it's just, mm-hmm. it's using all the looks to tell the story and the mm-hmm. it's pulling you along and it's like, you know, guy who made The Godfather did it, so I don't know.
Yeah,
it's also just like, as I've talked about, like I want more movies to be horny, and this is like, boy, this is a super horny movie.
I will say that you know, when I pulled it up to watch it, I saw that it has like, you know, rating attached to it or whatever, and it doesn't seem to like be a super high rating. And I remember people talking about it a good deal when it first came out, but it really, I don't think there's a lot of conversation about it currently or it, like in the intervening time period. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure whether or not this was going to be something that would be any good or maybe it didn't age very well. But I will say, like I said, from the very beginning, damn, this movie looks pretty. I mm-hmm. really enjoyed a lot of the film techniques and the old school, you know, using practical effects instead of CGI and stuff. Some shaky performances aside, I kind of love this.
Yay!
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, I feel like this is one that I watched like right around when it came out. I think I was too little to see it in the movie theaters, although I probably could have gone because my parents didn't really care. But I think I saw it like on home video, and I remember like thinking it was generally okay, but not like, but just sort of weird. And I think the Keanu thing like threw me, mm-hmm. and then like seeing it again in high school and just being like, oh wait, no, this like whole thing rules.
Yeah.
this is actually great. And I think, like, kind of what we've talked about before is, like, I think it's a bad Keanu performance. I'm sorry, but I also think, like, let's roll right into this. I gotta hand this crispy to Keanu Reeves for this movie.
Oh, amazing!
as much as, like, Gary Oldman's performance as Dracula is, like, iconic, I think there's something to be said for, like, anytime this movie is brought up, like, what is the first thing that people want to talk about?
Fucking Keanu.
I gotta give it to him. Sometimes the crispy isn't always about, like, the best performance. Sometimes it's just what's the thing you walk away with, and it's just like, huh, like nobody stopped him, huh?
Didn't even try.
This crispy is about being an icon.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, there's legit great Keanu performances out of it. I'm not dragging the man.
No, I love Keanu. I think he's fantastic. Yeah. I don't think he's the most talented actor, but I'm not gonna stop that. It's not gonna stop me from loving him.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah. No. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about next time. Jen, I'm gonna toss some movie titles out your way. I might give, like, a little summary. I'm assuming you know some of them, but you're gonna pick out our next movie for us. We're doing a Valentine's themed one. It's also, like, just coincidentally kind of our third anniversary. So we'll we'll let you choose what we cover for that. So for Love and Horror, I've got a couple choices here. The first two I'm gonna lead with. Also vampire choices, so we can make it a vampire and romance theme thing going on. Mm-hmm. We could do next The Hunger. 1983's The Hunger. Get a little David Bowie and Susan Sarandon up in here. Like some tragic vampires. Weird, fun, arty New York movie.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. We've had a lot of success with actor Larry Fessenden. We could do actor, director, writer Larry Fessenden and do the 1997 movie Habit. Another vampire movie about a vampire and a junkie falling in love.
Isn't he in, like, a recent vampire movie too with the cramp?
With Crampton, yeah. Yeah, that is not the movie that is up for bid, but yes.
All right.
That is also. So we got that one. So we're going to swing away from vampires a little bit. We've never covered the original My Bloody Valentine. I don't know if you want to set us up with another slasher, another banger from the studio that brought us Happy Birthday to Me. Kind of similar vein.
Okay.
Or we could do Spring, the movie about a American traveling abroad who meets a woman in Italy, and there might be more than meets the eye. Where are you? That's 2015. Huh. Where are you taking
us? You know, selfishly, I'm gonna pick Spring because I've never seen it. And I like the filmmakers, and it's been on my list for a long time. So I will, I'm curious to see what you think, and I'm going to watch it alongside. So
you'll be back here to talk about it with me.
No, I can't. No, but I will be along in spirit. So I'm going to go with that one. Yeah.
So Jed, that's, that one is from the same team that did Moon Knight, the, Benson and Moorhead.
Oh, okay.
I know you and right, yeah it's they've got a pretty good track record so far, so look forward to doing that one. Anything else you go wanted to shout out, give a recommendation for, anything you've been digging on before we get into the business stuff?
Loving Poker Face and Last of Us, but I feel like everyone's watching that already, so that's all I got.
I don't have anything. I don't do it. I don't go anywhere, you know, except for when I did, and then I got sick. So fuck that.
All right, cool. Yeah. I've been watching. I watched Last of Us as well. Been really enjoying that. It's a game that I really enjoyed, and I think so far the show where it's changed, I think, has been for the better, and the performance is really great. So it's kind of
I believe the writers of the game are actually, you know, working very closely with it. So the stuff that's new is stuff that's from them as well. So it should feel very consistent.
Yeah. Really digging on that. And looking forward to this season playing out and seeing if they I don't want to spoil too much, but if they stick with the ending from the game, because it's I think it's a divisive and controversial one that I hit for me, but I don't think it hits the same for everybody.
I have got so much work to do. I'm on chapter 4 of the game, so I
what season are you in?
Well, there's 12 chapters of the game. I'm on 4.
I'm just saying they divide it up into those different years. So
okay,
winter is when stuff starts to kind of kick off.
Okay, yeah. Good to know.
But yeah, let's go ahead and touch on the business side stuff here. Please reach out to us. Our Facebook group we'll let you in if you answer our robot questions. Our email is sellingthescream@gmail.com. We are still on Twitter somehow at Scream Selling. Generally, the Facebook group is a bit more of the active spot these days. If you could leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice, you know, download us on your friends and enemies' phones. We would really appreciate that. I do have the new iOS agreement here in front of me. It says that if you're leaving a bad review, just maybe don't. Just don't do that. It's written here like kind of plainly and plaintively. Like that.
Weird.
Just do something else instead.
They're just like always updating that. Huh.
Yeah. It's strange.
It's our nightmare.
thank you so much for coming back and talking drac with us.
Oh, absolutely. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Always happy to be here. Thank you.
Until next time, join us for spring. Bye-bye.
Bye.